But actually, every day you walk onto the set, it's incredibly stimulating and exciting. Every time you see what the new set is, every time you see a new script, every time you discover who the new guest star is going to be, every time you get to be Doctor Who, which is what happens to me. I go to work and I've got to try and be Doctor Who. That remains for me immensely exciting.
These are the Target Files, Doctor Who, Season 10 Reviews. Join us now as we discuss the final season of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor and Stephen Moffat as showrunner.
Hello and welcome to Doctor Who Target Files, the Season 10 specials. This time we are discussing Episode 4 of Season 10, Knock Knock, written by Mike Bartlett. This is Mike in Swansea, and over to my co-host.
Hello there, this is Alex in Exeter. So, Mike, what did you think of Knock Knock?
Really enjoyable, Al. A very creepy modern horror plot, I thought, with hints and influences which were very evocative of the past in horror movies, other type movies, and older Doctor Who stories.
I agree, it had lots of beautiful feelings towards sort of classic Who and sort of nice references. Great references to really good horror and sort of. But I think it might have overused those horror sort of references a bit much, but I really enjoyed it.
Okay, well, yeah. How do you feel? How do you mean that you felt it overused a few references?
Though it worked really well, it did have a few classic sort of horror references, you know, where, you know, people go off and get attacked and, you know, you never go off on your own in the basement and all those sort of things. But I think I could let it go because I thought it was excellent, really.
Yeah, the famous sort of trope of splitting people up.
Oh, most definitely. Sort of never get split up and they split up immediately.
Yeah, it does allow for more menace, I guess, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'd agree. I let it go. I know some people have been moaning a little bit, but I think this episode was excellent, really. It had great. I thought it started really well. It felt like you could relate to it, and then it went on into the sort of horror sort of bits, and you know, the Doctor was just great in it, I thought.
Yeah, a good bit of humour to start with in the TARDIS, wasn't there, with the Doctor being a removal service, taking Bill's cases to the new pad?
Yeah, I really liked that sort of humour at the beginning, and the whole sort of finding a house to live in and then having the creepy day with Susie Landor sort of just being there and asking if you want to live in his house, which you wouldn't do if you paid you, basically.
Perhaps quite unusually, a very likeable supporting cast, really.
Yeah, they were actually quite the supporting cast, you know, not all of them in it that long, but I think it really worked, actually.
Yeah, I wanted to go back and talk a bit about the influences. We had a great mansion house. Apparently it's part of the house that was used to film Blinkin', the Wester Drumlin's house in that episode 10 years ago. The house from Blink is part of two houses, and I think the gate may have been familiar from that classic Stephen Moffat episode, Al.
Yeah, apparently the one of the shots of the cellar is the same cellar as Blink, though that was a studio as well, apparently. And apparently David Susie stayed there many years ago, apparently, he was saying.
Wow, so yes, that's actually in Newport, that house, isn't it? Newport, Wales, folks.
Yeah, apparently he said, oh, sure, I've stayed in. And he remembered, oh, me and my brother, John Susie, so stayed in with the whole family for a weekend, apparently, about 20 years ago.
Yes, David Suchet's brother, John, a famous newscaster here in the UK for many years.
Yeah, I think it had great sort of references to other horror, and it worked really well, I thought. It didn't feel sort of, with some Doctor Who episodes, it takes a while to get going. I thought it wasn't clunky. And finally, having some new music was brilliant, I thought. I thought the music was fantastic in it.
Absolutely, Al. If we can move on to that later. Still talking about the influences. Yeah, there was a fair deal of classic Who as well, possibly the Ghostlight scenario of the creepy old house.
Oh, most definitely. It felt very much like Ghostlight, you know, having that house and not knowing how it relates to other things. And also the sort of references to, I think it was a reference to Harry Sullivan, wasn't there, with the young Harry meant to being the same, I think.
Yes, I think they actually cut that out of the final episode, folks, but Harry in this episode was set to be Harry Sullivan, the Fourth Doctor's companion. It was set to be his grandson.
Yeah, and I think there was a slight reference to it about, you know, on the War with China, and that was it, where I think it was meant to be a bit more, I think it was meant to be a scene when they get put together where you find out he's Harry Sullivan's grandson.
Returning again to influences, I thought the idea of insects within the building reminded me a little bit of Frontios back in the day.
Oh yes, most definitely, the whole insects controlling the building. And they're just disgusting, those insects. I was having slight problems with them, but yeah, there's definitely connections to old Who, I think, in this.
Yeah, and then moving on between new and classic Who, in the Mark of the Rani Colin Baker story, we had people turning into wood, and we had wood people in the 2011 Christmas special, The Doctor Witch in the Wardrobe.
Oh, that's true, and also the tree people in the second episode of Christopher Eccleston, you had those as well, didn't we? So I think wood has been a sort of important part in Doctor Who.
Yeah, the Forest of Cheam, and we all know the sonic screwdriver doesn't work on it, of course, so...
Exactly. I do like the way they're using the screwdriver in these episodes so far. It's sort of not taking over.
Yeah, I mean, do you feel... I thought the episode was very well paced. I thought it moved up sort of very creepily from that initial sort of comedy opening with Bill.
Started off with the sort of comedy and then trying to find a house, and then the comedy with Bill and the Doctor, and then straight into that really beautifully shot, creepy scene with the first of the housemates being sucked in while he's listening to music. I thought it was so well done.
Yeah, very, as you said, the music really Marigold. We have been critical. Back on form this week, wasn't he?
Oh, most definitely. It is, music really sets the piece, and it's not in your face sort of music. It's a really clever mix of sort of using some pop tunes and then going into his own stuff and having sort of classical as well. And it just works so well, I think.
Yeah, it's a great blend. And then we had a few more sort of references to horror and Doctor Who in the past. We had the idea of people trapped in wars. That's such a horrible image, isn't it? We've seen it in Earthshock with the Cybermen. We've seen it in Star Wars with Han Solo. Claustrophobia,
that's it. Claustrophobia. Well, I mean, it felt like that in a lot in this episode. The whole fact the house was claustrophobic and it was trying to take over the whole of your body and the wood and the insect. I felt very claustrophobic from it.
Yes, but well blended as well with the moments of comedy, like the Doctor wanted to have a Chinese and eating the prawn crackers to deal with a very tense moment.
Oh, most definitely. Those sort of light bits work so well, and I expect those, knowing Peter Capaldi, they're probably real prawn crackers.
Yes, and guest performance-wise, I thought David Suchet was absolutely superb. A lifelong career ambition of him as an actor to be in Doctor Who, and he definitely took advantage of it, Al.
Absolutely fantastic from start to finish in this episode, and just the fact he is creepy and sinister and how he keeps appearing and disappearing, it works really well, I think, and that sort of conclusion at the end sort of works, but I don't know, I think it semi-works, but I think his acting in this is fantastic.
Yeah, it put me in mind of when we went to the Power of the Daleks animation screening at the BFI last autumn. People were talking about how Patrick Troughton could move and turn on a sixpence, you know, turn in an instant from serious to comic as the Doctor. And I thought David Suchet showed certain moments of that. You know, toward the end there was a rather tender scene with a big reveal. He turned from sort of tenderness to anger towards Bill and the Doctor in an instantaneous moment.
Oh yeah, that scene is really, really good, and it showed David Suchet how good he is. He just went from being really sort of downtrodden and sad, and sort of menace got crept in without even you noticing. It just shot you in the face, really.
Yes, even just a look before he spoke his lines.
It's like, you know, I can't say because it might spoil it, but, you know, there's a certain line he says, it's just like really soft, and it went, right, you're not going to have it then.
Yes, that put me in mind of David Tennant and Matt Smith talking about working with the late great Sir John Hurt on the 50th anniversary. They said they could come up with all these various ways of, you know, pronouncing their lines, but they look over to John Hurt, who would just do it with a single look.
Almost definitely David Suchet has that, because, you know, And he was even, apparently, he was even watching the fan show to get a complete idea of fan life and that before recording his bit. So he immerses himself, I think. It's just that what small little things he does, like the look and how he talks, just make him brilliant, I think.
I think he's going to love it. Hopefully he'll start doing a few conventions now.
That would be good. That would be good.
So the overall themes of the episode, possibly I thought of one phrase, clinging on to the mum's apron strings. Would that work for you, Al, in terms of the story?
Yeah, a little bit, and maybe having that same sort of thing between the Bill and the Doctor, really, a bit, because I think the Doctor is sort of looking for a new companion and wants to be with somebody, and then sort of she's saying, no, this is what I do when I'm not having adventures with you.
The direction, the pace, Al, the change of director this week, I thought he helped to make it very tense. Bill Anderson. What do you make of his workout?
I really enjoyed it because I think it just camera work he does makes it very sinister, very quickly, and sort of lightning flashes, very small little things he does, and it adds lots of cynicism to it and makes things scary where they wouldn't be scary normally. The whole floorboard creaks, and it's very small little things that sort of emphasise the sort of fear of the house, really, and then great bits at the end.
Yes, lighter moments at the beginning, Al. The little montage where Bill and her friends were looking through various potential houses with the estate agent. That was very much, to me, that very much had the feel of a RTD era sort of montage, introducing you to new characters and companions in the everyday world.
Yeah, I would agree. It definitely had that feel, the Russell T. Davis period. It's a quick way, I suppose, of introducing new characters, really. And I think it worked. It was quite fun.
And as we look towards the ending, Al, what did you make of the whole solution to the issues in this episode?
Well, I think it worked, but I know a lot of people have had niggles with it. I think it worked quite well because it might have been certain things related to the cat. I don't want to spoil it in case we haven't seen it yet, but I think it did work, and I like the way it, I thought it tied it up quite nicely, really, and then we have the other ending bit to discuss.
Ah, yes, indeed, the ongoing arc, or is it an arc or not, or apparently the contents of the vault are going to be revealed in the upcoming three linked episodes, which after next week, Oxygen, are episodes 6, 7 and 8, apparently.
That doesn't surprise me. I think it's becoming fairly obvious from what happened at the end. Well, most people think they've worked it out.
This is Alex Gibbons' Doctor Who News Round.
Hello there, this is Alex, and this is the Who's News on the 7th of May. First thing to mention again is the ratings for Knock Knock, which are fantastic. They have gone up. They were 4.32 million viewers, which is a good improvement on last week's episode. It had the highest ratings for content on BBC One on a Saturday night. BigFinish.com's main big bit of news this week is that Torchwood Season 5 is finally happening through Big Finish. It's going to be set up as three separate box sets, and it starts with Aliens Among Us. Out in August this year, box set one, and then second box set out in October. Big Finish have released their ninth Doctor Chronicles this week. This is a rather interesting idea, as Christopher Eccleston is still not interested in doing any more work as the ninth Doctor. So Nick Briggs has decided to do readings of special new episodes with particular characters coming back from the Ninth Doctor's period. It sounds a very interesting idea, as Nick Briggs will be again doing his impression of Christopher Eccleston's Ninth Doctor.
We're also discussing this week the BBC decided to put a special 3D surround sound, binaural is the technical term, episode up on the iPlayer version of Knock Knock, and myself and Alex have both had a watch of that with our earphones. Alex, your initial thoughts on the Knock Knock binaural version?
Oh, I'm glad you're saying that. I can never pronounce that word. I listened to it last night, and luckily I borrowed my brother's headphones, which are quite good headphones, Bose, and I really enjoyed it, but I understand it is a sort of person thing where it depends on your hearing. I really liked the 3D version because it made everything spread out. Lots of background sound sort of came to the fore, and bits of dialogue where you didn't really hear very clearly, like, you know, people talking to the other end, came out really well.
Yes, I've read up on this technically. A few posters on forums such as Gallifrey-based Doctor Who Online have offered their technical expertise on this idea of binaural technology for recordings. Yes, it does depend, you know, greatly on the shape of a person's ear, apparently, on where microphones are placed. Apparently, there's been certain recordings on set where mannequins have actually been built, so you place the microphones within their ears when recordings are made, which all sounds very, very strange to me. Yes, it's a very, very technical issue. Apparently, my questions beforehand were whether you'd have to have in-ear earphones or earphones that go over the ears. I opted for the latter, over my ears, and certain aspects of it worked for me, but a lot of it didn't, to be honest, Al.
Yeah, that's a very interesting point, because I haven't actually tried the whole episode with in-ear headphones, it was just my basic iPhone ones, but when I tried the sample, I think it did sound slightly clearer having in-ear ones than the over-the-ear. The over-the-ear ones, it sounded really clear because I really compare with headphones, but I think it is slightly better if you put in-ear ones, I think, which is a bit weird. Though I did have a slight gripe with it in the fact that to get the 3D sound, BBC decided to take the audio description off it.
Right, so yeah, that wouldn't be too helpful, would it?
It's a good... I watched the episode with audio description when it was live, so I knew what was going on, but it would have been better if it had kept the AD plus the 3D sound.
Yeah, the only reason I can think of, Al, is that possibly it would have been too invasive, which was...
Maybe I thought that, because it may have been too much.
Yeah, it being invasive was going to be a criticism of mine, because I felt the music took me out of the scenes too much. It worked in certain parts better than others. Ironically, you know, it was built up as being that we'd all hear the knocking on the walls, we'd hear the creaking of the floorboards, but the first time it really captured me was when the Doctor was outside talking to Bill earlier on. He spoke to her off camera, and I suddenly looked over my left shoulder, even though I'd seen the episode in normal audio before.
That's what I think it was better, because bluntly honest, the knocking on the floor didn't sound that much better than what I've got in my living room, because we've got such a good system in our living room, 5.1 system in our living room, but the actual knocking bits didn't sound much better on headphones, but the actual, where the dialogue was coming from, sounded a lot better. It actually made you look to your left and right while you were listening, really.
Yeah, and the other main thing which really stood out was the sound of the record scratching and the record needle. That came across very well, very deep, very realistic.
It was great. You know, it's a vinyl junkie. I love vinyl, and it was just all that little scratches and little prods with the violin and that. It just sounded beautiful. And I think other little things, like, you know, the noises at the beginning when they're outside, you know, when they're looking for a house and it's near a factory, all these sort of noises came really well. But I think when you've got too much going on, like when you've got three people talking plus the insect noise plus the sort of noises the house made, it sort of overlapped and didn't sort of got a bit over the top, I thought, to be honest.
Yes, I think definitely the more isolated sounds were noticeable, weren't they?
Yeah, most definitely. I think it works. I think that whole idea of 3D sound works brilliantly for dialogue, which is always a bit of a nibble with people these days, saying people don't talk loud enough when acting these days. I think it's a great feature for that. But I think if you have too much going on, it just immersifies and you don't get everything.
Yes, I think there has been a sort of technical arguments online about whether it's truly binaural, because apparently this was created in post-production, whereas it wasn't actually recorded that way on the set. So it's not as pure.
To get proper binaural, does it have to be live then?
Yeah, there has to be certain types of microphone on the set, I think, actually, when they're recording it.
So it can't be done as a sort of sound thing afterwards then? That's an interesting one, because I saw that it was done as a sound thing afterwards, wasn't it?
Well, it can, yeah, because they have done it, and it's obviously parts of it have worked better for yourself than it has for me. But as we said, it seems to be a matter of personal hearing and personal taste, doesn't it? What works and what doesn't.
I think it's the size. I think, as you're saying, well, no, my ears aren't that big. Well, I think the size of the ears and the way your lobes are and all that sort of stuff seems to make a point. But I think, is it worth doing another attempt with it? Because I think it worked in some bits, but I don't know. I think it was, as a lot of people have been saying, a way of getting the ratings up is what they've all been saying.
I hope so. I mean, is it used in sort of radio more nowadays?
I don't honestly know, because it's a completely brand new thing. I think it might be being used more for things like that. It'd be interesting to know if Big Finish use it or not for their plays, because they always sound really good.
Absolutely. So let us know, folks, your thoughts on the binaural copy at DW Target Files Twitter, or search Facebook for Doctor Who Target Files Podcast.
Definitely, definitely. So, what other things we need to discuss? I think. What do you think of it overall?
Overall, and heading towards scores. Yes, very enjoyable again. Possibly a little sickly sweet at the end. You know, somebody made a point on social media last night. Can we go back to the good old days when people were being evil just for the sake of it, instead of having a ulterior reason?
Yeah, I saw that. And do you think if they cut it without the sweetly sick ending, would you have enjoyed it more?
Yeah, you know, in certain ways, you'd want David Suchet to be a returning character, wouldn't you? You'd want him to have a little bit more of a sinister edge to him, but ultimately, that's not going to happen now.
No, I just thought there was a lot of people, there was somebody I saw on Facebook going, it would be a much better episode if they hadn't had the sweet, the happy end, ever ending ending, basically.
Yeah, so in terms of that, possibly a little let down. The music was better again this week. The pace was excellent. The build-up of tension, the direction was superb. The sort of tagged-on ending of the vault, possibly a little bit of a letdown for me. I mean, I think we've all guessed who is going to be in the vault. The idea of the piano just seemed a bit out of kilter with the rest of the episode to me, although it has got me quite heavily interested in how that's going to pan out with the vault.
Yeah, I agree. This whole vault thing is getting... Well, I know we all got a good idea who's in there, basically, now, I think, because that... You know, two things were sort of big hints. One, the Mexican food, and two, the pot goes the weasel bit. I think that sort of said certain people immediately, in my opinion. And I think, like you, I think it would have been better if they'd stopped the episode before we got to the vault bit, I think.
But, you know, to me, the question is, which one? You know, it could be one of two versions of a character we both know are returning this year. So I suppose that is still a question. It could be we're expecting it to be one version of that character, and it could be the other one.
Well, I still think we've got three alternative answers on the vault. You know, it's either two particular characters, or it's another version of somebody coming back from the past. So I don't want to spoil it for people. But that's the three things. But the thing that sort of rules out a certain aspect of one of the characters is that I don't see him enjoying Pop Goes the Weasel.
And yes, is that the whole line about I'll tell you about another adventure, wasn't it? And then but young people are being eaten, and then that.
I mean, it's just that, and then he thinks you know what she's like. I'm not gonna say who I'm thinking of, but
he
started hearing Pop Go the Weasel. It went, my brain instantly went, that's a particular character.
But it's a lovely concept, isn't it? The locked vault. Stephen Moffat talks about it in the latest Doctor Who magazine out this week, folks. He mentions how, if you move into a house, as they do in this episode, Bill and her friends, and something is locked up like the tower is, you just have a natural human instinct to want to know what's in it.
I know, it's complete curiosity. You know, you always want to know that bit you can't get to, really, isn't it?
Absolutely, and he's really playing on that on his last season, and it's really making me look forward to this mid-episode arc now. I think next week is more or less standalone, but I think there might be a cliffhanger where we see who is in the vault is revealed next week, Al. That might lead on to the episode 6, 7, 8, which are all interlinked with the idea of truth monks, I think, which are going to be the villains in those three.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because episode 6, I'll get the right, 6, is definitely the start of something, and sees at certain people are actually mentioned in the promo for that.
Yes, Moffat.
That was what was putting me off certain people being in the vault, because you knew in the promo, you know, for each episode, they're mentioned in episode 6.
Yes, Moffat back again, and Toby Whitehouse back again for one of those.
Yeah, it's going to be. I reckon that's going to be a very good. Well, I have little fears about Oxygen, because it could be another Sleep No More.
Been buoyed by the trailer and the clip released this morning, so.
It looks good. I'm not saying it doesn't look good, and you know it's going to make you very scared about what he's been saying. But I just worry it looks a little bit like the Mark Gatiss episode. Wasn't that great? Sleep No More.
Yes. Anywho, anyhow, back to scores, Al. I'm going to give Knock Knock. Should we give one for the binaural version and one for the original version?
Let's do that.
Knock Knock original version, I'll stretch it up to a 9 this week. Thoroughly enjoyable again. Well paced. Elements of lots of horror movies and some classic Who stories. Very excellent performance by David Suchet as the guest star. Very likeable set of friends for Bill. Possibly, I want to mention this quickly, Al. Bit of unfair criticism, saying a few people have said online, well, if you cast all these people in Class, then that would have been a better show. But I find that a little bit unfair, you know, comparing guest stars for one episode with something that got a whole series, and it was fairly enjoyable.
Yeah, I will agree with you on that, because as you know, I wasn't a big fan of Class to begin with, and I watched it again, and I just thought it grew, it had a nice pace to it, Class, so they can't really compare that.
Can I just say my binaural score, Al?
Yeah, go that.
Yeah, binaural I'm going to knock off a little bit because it didn't work as well for me, so I'll give the binaural version an 8.
Well, that's good then. Right, I think for the normal episode of Knock Knock, I'm going to give it the same as you, a 9, because I thought it was absolutely excellent from start to finish. David Suchet was brilliant as the landlord, very creepy, very sinister, but had very good sort of gentle touches as well, and some great scenes with Peter Capaldi's Doctor. I liked all the sort of new characters they brought in very quickly and seemed to develop them, you know, really well, and you wanted to know about them and you cared about them when they got sort of sucked into the house. So I thought that was good. And I think it had a good story to it. I think Mike Barlett normally writes really good stuff. If you haven't seen Dr. Foster, I recommend it. And I think for the binaural 3D sound version, I'm going to give that about a 7, I think, because I really liked it. I enjoyed the way the sound went around your ears, and I know it's a preference and it depends on your ears, really, and how you listen to things, but yeah, I think dialogue-wise, it's fixed the problem with the niggle that people have got about actors who talk too quietly. So I didn't think it was great, but I think it's got premise to be better.
Interesting point, Al. You've just made me think. People complained about New Who back in the early days that the music was too invasive. Did you find the binaural effect help that with people's voices when they did overlap music?
Yeah, I did actually. Yeah, there was. I know there was a lot of, because you know, we first had different bits for different characters, and you know, with the first when it came back, people were going, "Oh no, that's terrible! It overtakes the dialogue, and we can't hear." But I think the way it works, the music, it's sort of a nice sort of ratio of music plus dialogue. But I think its main feature where this idea works is definitely dialogue, because it expands it, and you can definitely see where it's coming from. You can say, no, that's your left, that's your right. So I'm not saying it works in everything, because I think if you get too much with, like, you know, scenes with Doctor and David Suchet and the insects as well, I was slightly struggling. I had to have the headphones on quite loud to cope with all that, really.
Ah, well said, mate. Well explained. So next week, Jamie Matheson back, following what I thought was an excellent episode back in Season 8, Mummy on the Orient Express. You've just said you're not sure how much you're looking forward to Oxygen Al, but hopefully it'll be another good one.
I like to. I'm sort of in the middle, because I love Mummy on the Orient Express, and I loved Flatlines he did as well, and that they were brilliant. And I just worry when you get on a spaceship, it has to be really tight if it's going to be about the whole concept of, you know, oxygen being priced and everything. But if it's done well, I think it will be quite a tight, really good episode. I have hope, because they've all been good so far.
Yeah, I think so. I got good hopes for Matheson after Mummy on the Orient Express. But part of me, it's frustrating part of me, because I want to know what's in that vault now. It's really been built up by the end of the episode, and possibly it will be the cliffhanger for next week going into episode 6.
I reckon you can't really take that what's in it, as people, you know, every week, because people are starting to get a little bit annoyed with it. I know people keep saying, oh, it's the Matt Lucas cameo bit every time at the end now, and they're getting annoyed with that. I think you can probably take it to the end of Oxygen, then you have to either give us something more or explain what it is, I reckon.
See you next time, listeners. Next time on the Doctor Who Target Files Season 10 Specials, we will be discussing Episode 5 of Season 10, Oxygen, written by Jamie Matheson. tweet us at DW Target Files handle, or search Facebook for the Doctor Who Target Files podcast. Thanks for listening. Doctor Who Target Files, Series 10 Knock Knock Review Special, featured Michael Winks and Alexander Gibbons. 12th Doctor Theme, originally composed by Murray Gold. Version 4 of the podcast by Vale Mystery, V-A-Y-L Mystery Channel on YouTube. Please do check it out. News Round opening and closing themes by Ted Heath and his orchestra and John Baker. Doctor Who Target Files, Season 10 Specials Knock Knock Review, was recorded in Swansea, South Wales, and Exeter, Devon, England, during May 2017.